Welcome to the Football Podcast. This is your host, Mr. Number 9.
And this is The Fool.
Hey, everyone. Well, we have two podcasts in the same week, and amazing. What a week we've had of amazing games. Great two nights of football that I'm sure everybody loved. Your highlight of the quarterfinal round.
I mean, it was all amazing games. It's hard to pick a highlight, but I'm probably going for the England-Sweden game just because this is the hype train continuing, which was always hilarious.
I mean, and of course, looking at their fans suddenly going, I think it is a highlight from looking at their fans suddenly going, wait, we're actually good now. And like, this team's actually made the semis.
Yeah. It just, you're waiting for it all to crash down. But
Yeah, well, there's still like, there's equal to the second best position England's ever done in a World Cup. So they can't be too unhappy about that.
No, exactly. I think the other highlight on that, which is related, which has nothing to do with the football, but is the reports coming out of London that London was brought to a standstill with traffic congestion because everybody was at pubs and then everybody was out dancing on the streets after they won.
Nice.
Like, and they had...
But that's what we expect. I'm sure if England win the semis, it'll be an even bigger party.
Like, they've had the transport agency thing has had to put out alerts for, you know, congestion and shown photos of the congestion and it's people partying on the streets and things like that.
Yep.
And apparently... Like, fans were invading IKEAs in London and singing Football's Coming Home. So things like that. That's hilarious.
My highlight of the game was the game from Saturday morning, Brazil versus Belgium.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful game. And the highlight moment for me was that wonderful save from Courtois against Neymar.
I mean, that was amazing.
As you know, I am a sucker for good goalkeeping and good goalkeepers. I think Courtois was a player of the match in that tournament for me. And if there's a short list for good goalkeepers this tournament, Courtois should be up there. Definitely one of the best players in this tournament as well.
Oh, definitely. I think he has to be on the near the top of the list for best goalkeepers for sure. Though I guess Pickford, he's putting forward similar questions of like, hey, look at me.
Yep.
But you're right, Courtois should be on that list of great players as well, like best players of the tournament, because it's just amazing what he's pulling off. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Moving on to the actual games, though. Yeah. France versus Uruguay, that was basically, we talked up Uruguay. They played really, really well, but France just ran circles around them. There was really nothing Uruguay could do to stop them.
No, France
and
was working it out.
In regular time, like yes, you predicted the right result, but we both thought that the game would go into extras at least, if not penalties. So they did it quite easily in the end.
Yeah, no, I was amazed. I thought Uruguay had goals. I thought there was going to be a few goals in it. France managed two, but Uruguay managed none. So that was amazing by France to shut out their Uruguayan attack. Yeah. That Uruguayan attack is decent. They've got good players in there. They've got good defenders too. I mean, they hadn't really had a lot of goals scored against them. I think, you know, they've had 3 goals scored against them in the tournament, you know, both of them coming in knockout games. And this is also the first time they were kept goalless as well. So it's amazing by France to do all that.
Absolutely. Flip side of that is France are looking deadly. They're showing us why they're one of the favorites before this tournament started.
Yeah, no, all the way through that French team there, it's amazing. I don't think there's much weaknesses at all, really.
Yeah. Overall, still very, very impressive tournament. And this team are probably able to... They almost look like they can score goals at will.
Yeah,
especially if that other side just doesn't have the form on that day.
Yeah, exactly. And this French team, like, all through them, they're just pulling out wonderful performances each time. Like, and it doesn't really matter if one of them is sort of off... The rest of them are just so deadly and so good that, you know, it doesn't matter. They're able to create chances so easily, it almost seems like.
Yeah, they've just, obviously you've got the brilliance of people like Kylian Mbappe up front, but I think Giroud also again underrated, but he's been doing a really quietly important job for France as well.
No, Giroud.
And
definitely.
Of course Griezmann gets a lot of credit rightfully for scoring a lot of goals, but
No, but it's the French unit as a whole, really, have been working so well together. Each one of them doing what they need to do, basically.
Can you even think of a weakness in that team, in the French team? Is there a position? I mean, I'm going to go to the only position where I think is a slight weakness, which is Hugo Lloris. goalkeeping. He's not really been tested this tournament. If the game were to go to penalties, I think they could struggle.
Maybe, but he's pulled off some great saves nonetheless. I mean, like, when he's been called on to make something, to do, you know, to actually make the save, he's done it. I don't even know if I really call that much of a weakness. So we haven't seen him fully tested. The French defence is able to keep most shots out, so he only has to be called on every now and then to make a wonderful save. But he made a couple of them against Uruguay. But, like, it wasn't like he sat there and had nothing to do all game.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one thing. Interestingly enough, the team that has had the Golden Glove, i.e. best goalkeeper of the tournament, awarded to them, since it's actually been done in the 94 World Cup, only once has that team not gone to the final. And only twice have they not gone on to win.
Ah.
So basically, Oliver Kahn, who was also best player of that tournament in 2002, won the Golden Ball, not just the Golden Glove. And Michel Prudhomme in 1994, who was a really great, really good keeper, but Belgium only went to the second round. It showed you how well he played, that they actually considered him the Cooper of the tournament.
Yeah, amazing.
But yes, the last few, Manuel Neuer, Iker Casillas, I think just having that solid goalkeeper in your team gives you an extra edge. This is the only, like I said, I'm not suggesting this is actually a weakness, but I'm just saying, like, if you're going to say that if there's a weak link in this chain, it is there. It's not in any other position.
Yeah, I suppose, France. Yeah. Relatively speaking across the French team, yeah, that's the weak position. But even then, I'd... don't know how weak Lloris really is. Like, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. But he hasn't had the best season for Spurs.
No.
This season. So that's what I think could count against him. The other game we had was another cracking game for Belgium. Belgium versus Brazil.
Yeah.
Belgium, in that first half, totally controlled that game.
Oh, definitely.
But Brazil weren't playing badly, but Belgium was just playing better. And they just got the chances. And I like that the coach of Brazil at the end of the game was actually said that, look, we were two pretty much equal teams playing with equal intensity and, like, you know, equal skill. But at the end of the day, there is random elements in football. And in this game, I'm not going to say Belgium were lucky, but the chances fell their way and they took them. And they deservedly won. And this is basic. And that's, I think, a very fair comment on that game.
No,
it's not that they were lucky, but it was just that when the chances came, they happened to take them. And for Brazil, you ended up with things like Thiago Silva's hit on the woodwork, which we were basically like, how did that even miss? And then the saves that Courtois did against Neymar. And this is where I think potentially the difference between Belgium and Brazil. Belgium aren't afraid of going behind, as we know. And if France may score goals, but we know Belgium have goals in them, so they're never going to be afraid to go up there on the counter. I think France tried to get a quick one past Belgium when they're leading, then this is the thing, they have to get it past Courtois, who's been an imperious. This is the other thing where I think perhaps Belgium has a bit of an edge, is they completely changed their formation. They went with the back four and it worked against Brazil. Like, you don't experiment against Brazil. Roberto Martinez, who is, as we all know, a hardcore back three guy who loves attacking football and doesn't want to compromise on his principles, and he just went, nah, we can't beat Brazil playing that way. And that's it. I think that's the other side where Belgium got that edge to win the game. Like, Roberto Martinez did all the tactics correctly.
Yeah. It was during the game, the commentator pointed out that, like, he was like saying that Belgium were doing a really good tactically job shutting Brazil down, and he pointed out, and Roberto Martinez would have picked this as a game, you know, if they'd won their group, they would go to a second round and then the quarterfinals game against Brazil. And that was a key match. So Martinez has looked at it and prepared for however long since the draw's been out for a Brazil quarterfinal and has thought, how do I beat Brazil? And this is how, and so he's had a tactics in mind for all that time up till now. That's what it showed. Like, they were super prepared for Brazil. They knew what Brazil was going to do, and they knew what they were doing to counter everything that Brazil could do. And part of that was going
absolutely. Absolutely. And, like, the most obvious thing we look at first is obviously the change in the defense, because obviously going from back three to back four, it's huge. But it's even the front line. He took off his top scorer, like the biggest player in the tournament in terms of size, Romelu Lukaku, took him away from center forward and played him on the left or right wing. He told him, like, you have a free role to swap around with Eden Hazard.
And he pushed
on each wing. And both of them are more than happy to swap around. And and I think Lukaku had a great game on the wing. And he was so unselfish, so brilliantly drawing defenders away. But, like, yes, that first goal Brazil conceded was unlucky with an own goal. But that second goal with Kevin De Bruyne, there's so much good work by both him and Lukaku to get that goal.
That was the other thing.
And Hazard had a perfectly great game as well. Oh, yeah. All three
of them did. And that was the other thing. Is De Bruyne was playing as the centre forward. So he brought on to play the midfield, which allowed De Bruyne to push up. And it was wonderful. Like, Brazil didn't know what to do. They had De Bruyne running around in the front line with Hazard and Lukaku either side of him. And they were just like, how do we deal with this? And they didn't, basically.
And Lukaku basically cancelled out Marcelo and attacked the whole game. Like, Brazil's left-hand side, which has been, like, probably their most important attacking front, versus Marcelo, Neymar, and Coutinho, to attack from. He basically took them all out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
And I feel like this is a bit unfortunate for Neymar, because he finally went, oh, crap, this referee is not giving me penalties when I dive. And started, okay, I remember now, I'm Neymar, and played like one of the most brilliant 30 minutes of football I've seen an individual player play, and just try and lift that team and get that goal. But it was just not enough. Courtois basically was a bridge too far for him to cross.
Yeah, exactly. And Courtois was amazing. And between the sticks, so.
I credit to him. Neymar didn't sit there crying after they lost the game. He sat back, and then he actually went, and because he's the captain of the Brazilian team, went and shook hands with every member of the Belgian team, and probably wished them well. So, I know he's got a rep and everything, but he at least is not a sore loser.
No, he knew when they'd been well beaten and when the other side had played well. It wasn't like it was a scrappy game. It wasn't a bad game.
Both sides played the game they wanted to play. Like, Brazil couldn't go back there going, oh, we should have played. No, they played exactly the way that was the optimal game, and they just turned out Belgium won.
Just turned out Belgium had the tactics to nullify them mostly. And were able to, at least for the first half, were able to completely shut Brazil out.
Mm.
And then for most of the second half, managed it as well. I mean, I thought the second half Brazil was better. We're looking more threat. Part of that was that sort of worked out what Belgium were doing and sort of sorted themselves out a bit. But Belgium were good enough to be like, no, we can hold on for a half, it's fine, this is we've got two goals, so.
Exactly. And they didn't panic after conceding that first goal. They just played it straight and played it well. Now moving on from that game, we had Sweden England, which once again a great game. I thought England just basically nullified Sweden. There's a thing about Sweden, like, I read a comment on an article where they said that you get the impression that if they were a club side, like, they would be one of those club sides that did really well for the first half of the season, and the second half everybody would have worked out what to do, like, counter them on their set pieces, look at where their strengths are, and just don't give them that opportunity to score from there, and you know where their weaknesses are in their defense. And turned out to be true, more or less.
Pretty much.
England are probably the first team that Sweden played that actually knew how to counter Sweden, and England and Sweden didn't have a plan B. Being said, England played very, very well. Harry Maguire was probably man of the match for me in that game. Got a goal, but even if he hadn't scored that, he was defensively great. My only concern with England, and I think Jose Mourinho agrees with me, is that I don't think Kyle Walker is a central defender. I think him in there instead of someone like Eric Dier, who's a much more solid central D guy, that's possibly something that could come back to hurt them. I mean, Kyle Walker's a quick player, and he's a really good player. So I know that why they want him in that lineup in England. I know why Southgate's picking him, but I don't see Kyle Walker as a ball playing center forward, Rio Ferdinand mold, because he's not even playing on the right side of the central defensive trio. That's Stones' end, Maguire's on the left end. He's on the central CD in that back three. And like I said, that's basically your Sol Campbell, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry.
Yeah, exactly.
Position. And, well, Kyle Walker's many, many things, but he's not John Terry. Here's the thing, you wouldn't swap Ashley Cole and John Terry.
No.
In your team. But
not to go against the chosen one, but I guess the only defense at the moment is that for having him there is it seems to be working. He hasn't really done anything wrong yet. I mean whether they
there's Dyer, and possibly you could have picked I guess they could possibly have picked Phil Jones in that position.
Yeah.
But that's a potential weakness for England also, because I think if they get an injury in amongst their central defenders, after Phil Jones, you've got someone like Danny Rose or, Eric Dier playing out of position to be there. So there's not a lot of depth in that area.
No,
and that could
not.
End up hurting them if they get an injury, or if one of their one of them has a poor game and needs to be swapped out. That's where I could see a potential issue. On the flip side, if Gareth Southgate ever wants to actually swap around his formation mid-game, having Kyle Walker does give you a bit of flexibility, because he can just move into right back if he wants to slot into a back four. And you can easily put Ashley Young on the left back, even though it's not his right foot. Yeah, that's not the foot he likes to use there, but you can easily do it. Or even Walker could go on left and play a left fullback position if they were to swap over to a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3 formation.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the thinking as well. Like, say, at the moment it seems to be working, so I don't really want to criticise Southgate too much for tactics that are working. I suppose, the flexibility there allows it for him to be able to easily change.
Like I said, I'm not saying that Kyle Walker's necessarily played badly. I'm just merely saying that is a potential. If there's a weakness in this England side, that is the weakness that I see.
Yeah, I guess that's
And correct. I'm not even going to go as far as to say Kyle Walker is the weak link in the chain, like I said about Hugo Lloris. Like, I think this would be a tactical thing as opposed to something necessarily to do with the player. So that the weakness is the weakness of this formation and this strategy.
Yeah. I see what you mean. It is the potential for going wrong if they come against something like France in the final. That could be a problem, but we'll see.
Or even Croatia in the semis.
Yeah. Or Croatian semis. Like, they might be able to find the weak, exploit that weakness through the centre, but we'll see.